Good morning. We'll call to order the meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors for February 15th, 2023. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and Director Slauson is going to lead us in that.
Would everyone please join me in the salute to our nation's flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I would ask the secretary. Are you right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Secretary, to inform us about the virtual meeting and do a roll call.
Okay, we'll go over the EMWD guidelines for virtual participation in EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And now I will do roll call. Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
President Pauly.
Present.
Director Corona.
Here.
And Director Record is absent. Our legal counsel is also here.
Thank you. I'd like to ask our public affairs officer if we have any guests to introduce or any public comments.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Move on to item 2, public hearing, and I believe that item may be deferred, so I'll turn it over to our district council to advise
Mr. Chair, if we could go back to item 1, public comment.
Yeah. Do we have any public comment?
No.
Thank you. Yes, regarding item 2, I'd ask the staff is asking the board to continue this matter, and this matter concerns the establishment of Community Facilities District number 2022-94 and 2015-70 to ensure that adequate notice is given to the public. We request that this matter be continued until March 1, 2023 at 9 a.m.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to item 3, recognitions for Eastern Municipal Water District's 2022 Water Champion. General Manager.
Director Armstrong, we're going to have Bacall present the item for the board today, and he'll share with you our selection for our Water Champion of the Year Award. Bacall.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. So each year, EMWD's Water Champion Award is presented to an individual or an organization that demonstrates exemplary service in helping EMWD achieve its mission to deliver value to our customers and the communities that we serve by providing safe, reliable, economical, and environmentally sustainable water, wastewater, and recycled water services. This year, EMWD has selected the County of Riverside to receive the 2022 Water Champion Award. The Riverside County Board of Supervisors and their staff have acknowledged and supported the need to invest in water and wastewater infrastructure by providing EMWD with access to federal funding that may have not otherwise been available to local governments and special districts. Most recently, the Board of Supervisors approved generous sums of federal American Rescue Plan Act funding for key EMWD projects that will advance infrastructure developments within our region. As the population of Riverside County and EMWD service area continue to grow, partnerships such as the one that we've established with Riverside County's Board of Supervisors and their staff will play a vital role in ensuring that EMWD is prepared to meet the needs of our customers today and for years to come. On February 28th, EMWD General Manager Joe Mawad and myself will attend the Riverside County Board of Supervisors meeting to present this award to supervisors and their staff. We look forward to continuing to strengthen EMWD's partnership with the County of Riverside in order to improve the communities that we serve. Thanks.
And Dr. Armstrong, we definitely look forward to having our board members join us for that February 28th presentation of the award to the Board of Supervisors. I, for one, value the partnership that we've developed over the last several years with the county, and beyond the funding that Bacall mentioned, it's also helping our customers with the rate assistance program over the last couple of years through the COVID. So there's just been a number of things that the county has stepped up and partnered with us on, and we feel strongly it's appropriate for us to present them with this award. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions.
Well, just a comment. I think, to your point, not only have they helped with the funding, but I know that you personally have reached out to the county to establish a greater working relationship, and I think you see the fruits of those efforts, you know, in this, and so I think that's a great job. But do you have any comments?
I agree. I think it's well-deserved.
Thank you.
I appreciate that relationship.
Much appreciated. We definitely value your support, and hopefully you can join us for the February 20th event. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there, well, let me check with President Pauly or Director Corona if they have any comments. I don't hear any.
I think it's a great honor for us to give the award to the county. They've really done a great job in helping us monetarily to build these facilities, and I look forward to a better and better relationship with them.
Okay. We'll move on to item number 4, executive reports, and start with our general manager's report.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, as you're aware, the water supply conditions throughout the state have continued to improve with a recent increase in state water project allocation from 5% to 30%. It appears that Metropolitan will not be implementing a allocation plan, at least for this year. Having said that, the process with Metropolitan to develop the allocation plan continues to advance, and we're very much part of those discussions and conversations with Metropolitan, but indications are that the plan will be developed, but action will not be taken to implement the plan this year. We'll see how next year evolves, and potentially, if the need arises, Met will take the action for next year. Having said that, although the conditions on the state water project have improved significantly, we still face significant drought conditions along the Colorado River, and that leads me to item B. As you're aware, recently the six states have submitted a proposal to the Bureau of Reclamation relative to the reductions that have been asked by the Bureau of Reclamation. Unfortunately, the six states plus California were not able to reach an understanding on a common approach. So the Colorado River California users have submitted what's called the California Compromise Plan to the Bureau. Both of those plans are being modeled by the Bureau of Reclamation. The Bureau of Reclamation is also advancing a additional or supplemental environmental document to look at those two options, as well as a no-project option, as well as a potentially a compromise option. So all of that is being looked at by the Bureau of Reclamation. And somewhat related to that, Director Armstrong and I had the opportunity to meet with Commissioner Tootin Monday night at the Metropolitan Retreat. It was a really good conversation. And from my perspective, she just did a really incredible job in explaining the complexities and the challenges that we all collectively face on the Colorado River. And on the sidelines, she also, as a side note, she was very complimentary of EMWD and our efforts. But the issue I wanted to raise is that at this point, California has submitted its own proposal to the Bureau. Our two senators, Senator Feinstein and Padilla, as well as the Natural Resources Secretary, Wade Crowfoot, have weighed in support of California's proposal to the Bureau of Reclamation. We believe that A review of the curtailment plans will be identified or completed by March of this year with a final decision by the Bureau sometime this summer as far as the path forward. The challenge, though, is that if the states can't come to an agreement, all seven states, and this takes a turn to changes in the water rights allocation, that will likely be challenged in court. And there are very clear requirements under the law of the river, and any changes to those water rights allocations would be challenged in court. And California has made that clear that it's in our mutual interest for all seven states to come to agreement on a compromise. So more to come, and we'll keep the board updated as we continue to not only engage on those discussions, but also they have direct impacts on us and the entire region, frankly. Next item I wanted to share with you is that next Tuesday, President Pauley, Director Armstrong, myself, and staff will be up in Sacramento to meet with our recently elected representatives, including Assembly Member Bill Asaley, as well as Assembly Member Corey Jackson and Kate Sanchez, as well as Senators Kelly Ciarto and Richard Roth. Will be an opportunity for us to brief them on all the various initiatives that EMWD is undertaking, our region's needs, and our priorities for the region. We'll also be meeting with various agencies. In fact, we have scheduled a meeting with the chair of the State Water Resource Control Board, Mr. Joaquin Esquivel. That meeting has been scheduled for Tuesday morning. So we're looking forward to those meetings with our representatives, and we will brief the board on the result of that trip accordingly. Also, next item, I wanted to share with you that we have scheduled a meeting with our newest supervisor, Supervisor Gutierrez from the County Riverside, will be visiting us on March 9th, and he'll also be touring our facilities. As you know, Supervisor Gutierrez represents Riverside's 5th supervisory district and serves the city of Moreno Valley, Hemet, San Jacinto, and several communities within our service area. So we do look forward to briefing him on EMWD, introducing him to who we are. Of course, he's very familiar with us, given his recent role as mayor in Moreno Valley. But this is even a more important opportunity to share with him what we do throughout this region and our role and the need to continue to partner with the county. Also, we were informed on Monday this week that Congressman Raul Ruiz will be visiting us today. In fact, he'll be touring our San Jacinto water reclamation facility. So we are planning to meet him and give him a tour of not only our recycled water facility, but also share with him our plans for our purified water replenishment program, as well as our solar investments, and of course share with him the wetlands that we currently operate over at San Jacinto. Congressman Ruiz has indicated that he is looking at various earmarks for the upcoming year, and we will be having that conversation with him as well on various projects within his district. Under items of interest to the board, as you're aware, Metropolitan Water District did host a two-day retreat in Temecula. Director Armstrong participated in those conversations. I was able to attend the first day of the retreat, and I thought it was a very fruitful conversation to share how we can potentially mitigate the impacts of climate change. What are the strategies? What are the priorities as a region that we should undertake? So it was a really good discussion to better understand the impact of climate change on water supply and those interrelated dimensions on our water supply, discuss the various options for responses, and frankly talk about Metropolitan's business model and the need ultimately to revisit how Metropolitan funds its various initiatives and revenue versus expenditures and fixed versus variable. So it was a really good conversation to better understand each member agency's perspective and really find that common ground that we all need to move forward together collectively. I know Dr. Armstrong will be making comments about that later. And finally, under my report, I'm very pleased to share with the board that our wastewater mascot, Patrick the Pooh, has been recognized on a national level. In fact, last night, he was the recipient of an award from the National Association of Clean Water Agencies up at the meeting in Sonoma. He made quite the splash up there. It was very popular, and hopefully we can share with you a couple of pictures from last night's event. Our staff member Kevin Pearson was up there as Patrick the Pooh and received the award. So we'll see if we're able to share maybe a couple of pictures from that event. As we wait to pull up the pictures, I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have on any of my updates.
Okay. Director Slauson, do you have any questions?
Do you have a time for the Supervisor Gutierrez on the 9th?
It's on March 9th, Director Slauson. We will get you the exact time of that visit. I don't know, Pakal, it appears to be early afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m., but we'll confirm that, Director Slauson. Okay.
Director Corona, do you have any questions?
No questions.
And President Pauley, do you have any questions?
I have no questions other than nice jokes from the general manager.
I had one, maybe Joe, clarifying on the Colorado River. My understanding is that the proposal that was put forth by the six states versus the proposal that was put forth by Metropolitan were really kind of addressing two different aspects of solving the issue on the Colorado River, whereas the Met's proposal is really geared towards what's the immediate need and what's really what was asked for, whereas the six states weren't really addressing that, but rather looking out into the future, longer term. So
that's a great point, Dr. Armstrong. You're absolutely right. So the current operational guidelines that govern operation of the Colorado River supplies expire in 2026. The six states are looking at the ongoing negotiations as setting the rules permanently, potentially. And as you're probably aware, what we've seen in the press is they have put forward a plan that includes allocation of system losses. And with that approach, California would bear the brunt of those system losses because we're simply at the end of the river, and they're looking at it reach by reach. Metropolitan's approach, and frankly the Colorado users' approach in the state, is a bit different as you're describing. It's more of, let's figure out an immediate plan to deal with the next few years. And that plan includes building on what the state has proposed, which is a cutback of 400,000 acre feet, and building upon that. Let's get through the next few years, and then beyond that, we can sit down and talk about the permanent understanding of how we would apportion the supplies off of the river. So you're right. There's different approaches to the negotiation. The six states are looking at the permanent arrangement, whereas California, Colorado rivers, or users are looking at the next few years and trying to develop and implement a plan quickly as we look at the longer-term needs of the right. users on the river.
Thank you. Okay.
And we were able to pull up a couple of the pictures, and here's Patrick accepting the award, and next picture you see the audience very much enchanted with Patrick. With that, thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, continuing on with executive reports. Laura, do you have anything this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Okay. Nick?
I have no report today. Thank you.
Nothing from me either.
Matt?
Good morning. Just a quick update on recycled water. Demands have crept up a bit to around 10 to 15 MGD, and so at this point we're trying to top off storage, get it all the way up to 90%. We're still discharging, but we've reduced it to a very low rate. It's about 1.5 MGD today. So we're hoping to hit 90% by this weekend. We'll reassess it next week, and by the next meeting should hopefully have more clarity of when we'll actually stop discharging for you.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. I would look for a motion and a second to approve that.
I would move approval.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved by Director Slauson and seconded by Director Corona. Is there any discussion?
Okay. Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Slauson?
Yes.
Director Corona?
Aye.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Okay. All right. That moves us to our action calendar. Item 6A, approve and authorize agricultural lease a property at the district's Buena Vida Farms location.
All right. Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Get started with the PowerPoint here. Okay. By way of background, the board approved a two-year lease with Quality Turf in June of 2020 for approximately 140 acres of property, and commonly known to referred to as the Buena Vida property in San Jacinto. And as you can see on the snapshot here, it's the area that's located in red, just northwest of the San Jacinto treatment plant. We are currently receiving $80 per acre per year for a total of $11,200 per year, and that lease expires at the end of this month. Back. So staff issued a solicitation, a request for bids on December 15th. That solicitation was mailed out to our agriculture customers, and it was included in the Riverside County Farm Bureau publication, Agriculture Magazine. The bids closed in mid-January, and we received one response from Quality Turf. Pricing came back consistent with what we're paying now at $80 per acre per year, but they did include $4 per acre escalation in years 2 through 4, along with a $5 escalation in year 5. And just to note, in addition to the lease revenue, the district also receives value through recycled water sales, removal of property maintenance, and reduced property risk and liability. So the proposed agriculture lease includes a lease term of up to 5 years with the option to on 140 acres, which may be reduced by up to 65 acres due to the San Jacinto Valley Advanced Water Purification Facility Project. We would have up to 6 months' notice that would be provided if construction activities impact the available farming acreage, and then the district also has the right to terminate the lease by giving up to 180 days' notice. Also included with the original purchase is a 10-acre residential property. This lease expires or will be terminated on December 31st of this year, at which time the house will be raised. The 10 acres is used for storing and staging farming equipment, and once the lease expires and following the house disposition, we're recommending that we amend the agriculture lease agreement and to include the 10 acres, or the residential lease to include it on the 10-acre property. And this is just a snapshot of the 10 acres. It's in the upper northwest corner of the property. Just an overview and then a little more expanded section here. So our recommendation at this time is for the board to approve and authorize an agreement with Quality Turf Incorporated for the agriculture lease of approximately 140 acres of property at the district's Buena Vida Farms location. That concludes my presentation. Are there any questions I can answer at this time?
I don't have a question, but I would just expand that having somebody maintain the site, it also prevents all this, usually will prevent all the dumping. And I've seen more and more of that throughout the county. It's really becoming a problem. So that alone is worth something. So I like the arrangement.
Director Corona, do you have any questions?
No, I'd move the item.
Very good. Director Pauly?
No, I'll second it.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
Okay. Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Corona? Director Corona? President Pauly?
Aye.
Okay, the item passes 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Okay. So move on to item B, approve and authorize agreements for third-party call center support services. Morning.
Good morning. Before I get started, I wanted to introduce the executive staff from Solix Incorporated. They have traveled all the way here from Parsippany, New Jersey. So we have Eric Seguin in the house with us, as well as Matt Barnes. So by way of background, back in 2019, the district contracted with Optimum CX to handle about 20% of our customer service calls as part of the billing replacement system. Optimum CX still currently handles our calls, and the program has been very successful. Additionally, back in August of last year, as part of the work-from-home deployment plan, we came and we shared some strategic staffing plans that include adding an additional call center to support our calls. We also shared that we will not be replacing any existing or future vacancies of call center personnel until we reach a to-be-determined staffing level. We know that we're about 40% built out right now, but we also know that self-service adoption rates are out there. So at some point, we expect that those lines to come to a point, and we'll be able to better determine what is the true count for our staffing internally. And additionally, the staffing plan included continuing to use third-party call centers for the foreseeable future. So let's dig a little deeper into the strategy plan for contacting with an additional third party, some of the benefits that we want to highlight for our board, staffing redundancy to ensure that our service levels are maintained, think high call-outs or, an all-hands-on meeting here at the district. A third-party vendor would be able to support those calls, and our customers would not miss any time off and not being supported. Contingency plans in case there is a local emergency. God forbid something happened, we would still have folks in place that would be able to assist our customers. Third-party call centers also have scalable staffing models. They're easily able to scale up and scale down to assist with the surge in volume. We think about, when we resumed the shutoffs, Optimum CX was able to demonstrate being able to effectively scale up to assist with handling that call volume. And then additionally, they are able to extend different hours of service if that's something that we would like to pursue in the future. So the selection process. We released an RFP back in September. We were seeking, a highly qualified firm to support our calls, both in English and in Spanish, looking for strong recruitment, training, and qualified staff, and the ability to provide those detailed analytics and reporting that is so important from a call center. We received 7 proposals in October. We went through the formal evaluation and shortlist, and on our next slide here in gray, you can see our top 3 shortlist, with Solix coming out on top with a total score of 94.3, and they also lead the way in terms of their pricing and payment terms with the lowest cost of call per hour. So our goal, ensure an exceptional level of customer service that is consistent with that is provided by the district. So just a couple of things about Solix. They're an award-winning business for over 30 years. They have a strong recruitment and training program, and then, pricing in line with the expectations in terms of industry standard and our current call center. Current third-party call center, rather. Some of their strengths and capabilities, they are fully deployed, work from home, very similar to us here at EMWD, a solid and robust quality assurance and training program. They have experience, supporting large utility companies. You see example, Public Utility Commission of Texas, Austin Energy, and a large account with T-Mobile. And we were also impressed with the technology and their business continuity plans. And, of course, they also have a host of optional additional services. Same team, different locations is really our motto here. We also wanted to loop back and highlight Optimum CX. They were established in 1999. They are also 100% telecommute program. And as I shared, they were able to adjust and demonstrate their ability to scale up in terms of staffing to help us with that increase in volume once those shutoffs resumed last March. And they are, again, actively handling our district calls right now while meeting our quality assurance expectations. So management and oversight, how do we ensure that they're meeting our expectations and, how many folks do we need to bring on? Staff went through an analysis, and we identified the requirement for 6 additional call handling agents. Director Armstrong, you did ask if these staff would be dedicated to our account, and they absolutely will be dedicated to the EMWD account. And the 6 would be in addition to our existing Optimum staff as well as the call center staff that we have in place internally. The table at the bottom, we're really just going to take a look at the projected monthly totals. We're looking at a little over 37,000 for Solix with 6 staff and just over 30,000 for Optimum CX with their current 5 staff. Third-party call management. So, we have the unique opportunity and benefit of being able to leverage technology to really be able to effectively manage staff that are working remotely. We are metrics-driven. We have dashboards. It's all analytical. And so we can effectively, manage folks remotely. Agent performance can be monitored real-time. We can address issues right on the spot. And then we continue to make sure that we address and monitor their calls on a consistent basis. President Pauley had asked about, well, what happens if they don't meet our expectations from a performance standpoint? We work directly with the vendor. We have performance management improvement plans in place. And ultimately, if it comes down to it, that staff member is replaced. So, and we have taken that action before. Escalated calls are routed directly to EMWD. We leverage our technology. So in addition to being able to effectively route calls to staff homes, we also can route those calls right back to EMWD supervisors if needed. Just a couple of examples of some of the dashboards and, you know, information that we have. I can see, you know, what's happening with staff here and what is going on, how long of the states that they have been in terms of talking or if they're waiting. And I can identify quickly if I need to step in or reach out and say, hey, what's going on with someone at any given time. Our next slide shows just a view of Calabrio. And Calabrio is a system that we use for quality assurance and workforce management staffing. Solix also utilizes Calabrio as well, so it's going to be a very smooth transition and partnership in terms of monitoring our calls and partnering to identify staffing. This snippet here is just a opportunity for us to take a look at our internal dashboards, and we review these on a daily basis, and we also share this information with our third parties. You'll notice right here the third party right on the dashboard so we can see their performance from the prior day. So the implementation timeline, so assuming that we receive approval here today, contract execution and discovery this month in February, technical setup, we're looking about February through March, staffing and training between March and May, with an anticipated go-live in May of this year. So the recommendation, approve and authorize a three-year agreement with Solix with up to two one-year extensions. For a full term, not to exceed just a little over $2.4 million, and a three-year contract extension with Optimum CX with 2 1-year renewals for a full term, not to exceed just over $1.95 million. And I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
I think it's a great idea to have an additional company involved. I have one question,
yep.
Silly question. It said no. The company must be stateside, no offshore. So what about Hawaii? If a firm came in from Hawaii.
Well, you know, I wouldn't mind going out there and visiting them on site. But they are part of the states. You know, I think that would be up for discussion. That would be.
I think the our intent, Dr. Slauson, was that we would not contract with someone from another country. That was really the intent, is to try to stay stateside.
Yeah. Appreciate
very
that.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to thank you for coming out from New Jersey and give you an opportunity to come up and say anything you would like to share about your organization that might be valuable.
Good morning, President Pauley and directors. Thank you for the opportunity to come up and say hello. Solix is a company that's been around for a little over 25 years, and our real core competency is supporting low-income programs and public assistance programs. So our clients tend to be public utility commissions, electric service providers, telecom service providers. So this is really right in the core of what we do in supporting your customers. So we're looking forward to building a partnership supporting you as well as your customers.
I just want to say thank you.
Do you have any representatives in Hawaii?
No, but we're looking to expand to Hawaii and California as soon as possible.
So. All right. Well, thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think this is a really great evolution of this area, and I think this is the one area of service and function that really lends itself well to this with all the matrix and the matrix-driven approaches. And is also an opportunity to expand our service to potentially later extended hours, which I think is really important to communities where a large portion of the community commutes during the daytime to have opportunity to talk to people at night. So I think this is a great great addition. So, Director Corona, do you have any comments?
support. I'll move the item.
Okay. And President Pauley?
No, I just want to say thank you to Nicole for doing a great job of putting this together. And I'd like to hopefully someday go out to New Jersey, take a look at their facility, and look forward to working with them. I will second the item.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. Do a roll call.
Sure. Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
President Pauley?
Aye.
The motion has passed 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Item C, adopt resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District acting as a legislative body of Community Facilities District 2020-88, authorizing the issuance of its 2023 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form. Good morning.
Morning, Director Armstrong, members of the board. This is related to a bond issuance for one of our CFDs. This CFD was formed in 2021 with a bonded indebtedness amount not to exceed $7 million for the purpose of financing district water and sewer improvements, Riverside County improvements, Valleywide Recreation and Park District improvements, and Southern California Edison undergrounding improvements. The CFD is located in Winchester, French Valley, President Pauley's division, west of Lake Skinner, and north of Metropolitan's water treatment plant. The project is being developed by Lennar Homes, and it's being marketed as the Reserve. The project contains 44 acres for 154 homes. We had an independent appraisal be conducted by one of the district's approved appraisers. With a data value of December 5th, the value was $79.29 million. I included some ownership information on this slide, but I'm happy to report we spoke with the developer last week, and as of last week, just 8 remaining homes remain under contract, and they're scheduled to close in March. So it doesn't appear to have any issues with closing homes. Back in December, there was a little bit less ownership, and it seemed like everything went according to their schedule. Based on the appraised value of $79 million, the value-to-lien ratio came in at almost 16 to 1. Delinquency levels, we didn't see any on the first installment of property taxes. 113 parcels were levied this tax year. The effective tax rate would be 1.94%, and as I mentioned earlier, 154 lots meets the district's minimum requirement. Bonds in the future may be issued only to refund these bonds. There will be no new money bonds to be issued. Projected par amount is $4.9 million, and the estimated project fund is about $4.4 million, coming in at a TIC of 5.2%. We had our same great financing team work on this project. The underwriter for this project was selected for Raymond James & Associates. Chelsea Redmond from Fieldman, our financial advisor, is here in person. We also have Anna Sarabian on the phone, as well as our representatives from Webb Municipal Finance, Matt Chesney. Looking at the board, the schedule down at the bottom, today we're seeking board approval. We intend to post the POS tomorrow. We're going to shorten the marketing period based on the recommendation of the underwriter, and so our bond pricing and closing date will be 1 week sooner. So we are intending to price the bonds on February 23rd and then close the transaction on March 9th. The reason being, our underwriter, as they watch the market, they feel comfortable 1 week of marketing should be enough, and there's a high desire for this credit and for investors to purchase the bonds. Also, with the demand and with future FOMC actions or any comments that they make in March, there might be some preliminary investor market shifts. So we're going to move that ahead really to benefit the project amount and the financing of the bonds. Recommendation is to adopt the proposed resolution authorizing the issuance of the bonds in an amount not to exceed $6 million. approve the related documents and authorize the GM, Deputy GM, or CFO to provide all the necessary actions to issue these bonds. That wraps up my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. You have any questions? No. Director Corona, do you have any questions?
No questions.
President Pauly, do you have any questions?
No questions. I'll move the item.
Okay. I'll second the item. So it's been moved and seconded. So you have a roll call.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
President Pauly?
Aye.
The item has passed 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Okay, move on to item 6D, adopt proposed resolution declaring assessor's parcel numbers 451-021-001 and 451-021-002 exempt surplus land and authorize agreement for exchange of real property with the county or the city of Hemet and in support of the Coston Lift Station replacement project and appropriation of $412,000. Morning.
Good morning. Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I'm Chris Teague, the district's real property manager. So as Director Armstrong mentioned, we're proposing a property exchange with the city of Hemet for the future Coston Lift Station. All of the subject parcels are part of the proposed property exchange are located in the southwest section of City of Hemet. As point of further reference, the image on screen shows Stetson Avenue, which is the major east-west corridor. It runs horizontally through the middle of that image of the exhibit. EMWD plans to exchange two small parcels noted as district parcels shown on the right-hand side of the image and adjacent to the City of Hemet Fire Station Number 2 for a portion of the city's Fire Station Number 4 property, which is located on the left-hand side of the exhibit. The existing Coston Lift Station is just north of the City of Hemet Fire Station Number 4. So Coston Lift Station is located on Coston Avenue, north of Stetson Avenue, and was operational for more than 40 years. It had capacity of 4.5 MGD and was built on a very small 7,000-square-foot lot. As you can see from the image, there's really no additional room for expansion. In 2021, the San Jacinto Valley Regional Integration Plan identified the need for a 5 million gallon per day replacement lift station to be built and in service by 2027. And the new lift station is expected to have an ultimate capacity of 11.4 MGD. So with the project need identified, staff sought a suitable location for a replacement lift station. The ideal location for this replacement lift station was identified, again, as the City of Hemet Fire Station Number 4 property, which is shown on the right-hand side of the image. EMWD will utilize vacant property on the City of Hemet parcel, which is kind of shown in the center and left-hand side of the image. The city is only currently using about a quarter of that five-acre parcel. Therefore, they have excess land to exchange with the district. Again, this property is in very close proximity to the existing lift station, only about 1,000 feet south of that site. In November of last year, a district consultant appraiser valued the 1.24 partial parcel that we intend to acquire at $486,000. This next slide shows an image or a rendering of what the future Coston Lift Station will look like. Again, it's going to be positioned south of the City of Hemet Fire Station Number 4. This site will bring ample room for expansion as well as operations and maintenance staff to safely carry out their duties once the facility is constructed. As the district and city collaborated, City of Hemet staff expressed interest in the district parcels, which are located on the southwest corner of Stetson and Palm Avenues. The district's parcels consist of a dirt lot with a few olive trees shown in the image on the right-hand side of the screen there, and are about 0.37 acres in size. The district utilized this site formerly for the Diamond Valley Booster Station, and that was taken out of service more than a decade ago. So the district really doesn't have use for these parcels. EMWD's consultant appraiser valued these parcels at $129,000. So just looking at a bit of the accounting here, with the City of Hemet parcel coming in at $486,000, the district would essentially get a credit of $129,000 for exchanging their parcels, with a net property exchange cost at $357,000. And an additional $55,000 would be required for escrow, surveying, fencing, things of those natures, bringing the anticipated total to $412,000. Both EMWD and the City of Hemet are subject to the California Surplus Lands Act. The act requires formal action by our board to declare property owned by the district as either surplus land or exempt surplus land. The district parcels discussed today are exempt surplus land because they're being exchanged for other property required for district use. The City of Hemet is on a parallel track, and they will declare their property as exempt surplus land. It's anticipated that the council will make such declaration during their February 28th council meeting. So with that, staff recommend that the board adopt the proposed resolution, finding that the district parcels are exempt surplus land, again, because the district is transferring for another property for its own intended use. Authorize the general manager to execute the land exchange agreement as well as ancillary agreements. And then finally approve the appropriation of $412,000 for the property exchange and share our own share of escrow, title, survey, and fencing. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Okay.
Well, we heard this in operations and engineering committee, and yeah, I think it's a great exchange. I think you guys have done a good job. I would just, in concert to what I said earlier about the farm that we're leasing out, this adds a little measure of additional security, being next to a fire station that's normally manned 24 hours a day. So that's a benefit.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great example of two public agencies working together and exchanging properties, in this case, to mutual benefit. So I think it's a great idea. Director Corona, do you have any comments or questions?
Yeah, no questions. I agree with everything that's been said. I think it's a good trade.
Okay. President Pauly, any comments or questions?
No comments, and I will move the item.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We could have a roll call.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
President Pauly?
Aye.
This item has been approved 4-0 with Director Record absent.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on to item 7. It's an information item, the 2023 Plan of Finance Update.
Good morning. I am very excited to bring this informational item to the board. This is an annual item that, per our debt policy, we'll bring to the board. And what we've done in the past and what I'll do today is provide a brief market update and then a recap and plan of finance for our special funding districts, which is our land secured program, our CFD program, and then also do the same for our general district debt, as far as a recap and highlights of last year, along with what the plan of finance is for this year. Start with our market update. Long-term rates, which are really representative of rates we would pay or we do pay on our fixed rate debt, tax-exempt rates finished 2021 near historic lows, very low. And focusing your attention on the graph at the bottom, they ended the year right around 1.5%. And prior to that year ending, as noted in green, the district was able to successfully refinance its outstanding general obligation bonds and provided savings to over 100,000 parcels within our service area in terms of reducing their property tax bill by what we collect to pay that debt. Now, rates across the board have increased substantially in 2022. As noted on the slide, went from 1.5% at the beginning of the year and ended the year at 3.58%. Really had to do with volatility in the market, as well as the Federal Reserve increasing rates seven times throughout the year. Rates steadily increased through the first half of the year, then some volatility as inflation numbers and different economic factors were at play. Moving on to our short-term interest rates, these are rates indicative of what we pay on our variable rate debt. These rates also increase considerably in 2022, going from 0.10% to 3.66%, so quite a big jump. Now, I zoomed out a little bit on this graph at the bottom of the slide to show 4 years, and I'll just quickly walk through this. In 2019, rates stayed between 1 to 2%, a little bit of volatility, but really hovered around that that area. Then the spike, that was really due to COVID and the impact that COVID had on the markets. There was 1 to 2 weeks where rates were really high. And then following that, as the Fed took actions to slash rates, investors really sought short-term options. So there's a really high demand for these types of instruments. That benefited the district and any other issuers of variable rate debt. And we had low rates for, a year and a half, if not a little bit longer than that. And in that time, as noted in green, with our Series 2021B floating rate notes, we were able to reduce the credit spread that we pay by 60%. So very good timing on the district's, option here, and we were able to lock that in. Then beginning with 2022, as I mentioned, 0.1%, as COVID kind of ended, or at least the fears of COVID with, financial market, as the Federal Reserve started increasing rates, investors started looking at more long-term options, locking in those higher rates, a little bit less demand for these short-term interest rates. And so with the market, with the supply and the demand, rates steadily have increased. They spiked around 3.66% at the end of the year and then came down in January. Last week, rates are back up near 3.5%. And so some volatility is expected as the federal government continues to work out, a lot of different things that they have to work out, as well as financial markets and investor preference and what they want to see. Moving on to our special funding districts, 2022 recap. A lot of great information here. I'll quickly run through it. We completed bond sales for 5 CFDs, lowering property tax bills. I included a summary table of those CFDs, the number of homes, and the average savings that each homeowner would expect to receive on their property tax bill. We also levied 85 CFDs and 5 assessment districts. Assessment District 7 matured in September 2022, so that will no longer be collected or levied on the property tax bills, and that affects about 2,500 parcels with also a reduced property tax bill. We also entered into 12 JCFAs and formed 3 new CFDs, 536 homes in those CFDs. The biggest highlight for me last year was an analysis that we did, and I thoroughly enjoyed working on this. I want to thank Director Armstrong for the request. The district learned a lot from the analysis that was performed. We engaged an independent firm to get an independent analysis, DTA Municipal Solutions, very experienced in this area of work. We did a 10-year analysis of homes built within CFD within EMWD's boundaries and if they were built with or without CFDs. We also looked at the use of CFD bond proceeds throughout the state and then also CFD tax impact on homeowners within EMWD's boundaries. I highlighted a couple key findings here. Just about 90% of the homes built between the study period were built with CFD financing. 9 out of the top 10 agencies within California funded fees with CFD bonds, and the tax benefit for homeowners with or without a CFD was inconclusive. You know, in short, they were no better off or worse off with or without a CFD. Throughout the analysis that we performed and all of the consultants we engaged, all the research we did, it really came down to you know, EMWD having a strong debt policy and strong practice, and really is an industry leader with its experience and the leadership and the team that we have. Shown on the right is a map we put together to illustrate the homes that were built with and without CFDs. Last year when I presented this item, I made a joke making fun of myself for using Christmas colors, but want to redeem myself and confess that my early predictions for the Super Bowl were correct, with the Chiefs taking on the Eagles with those colors. Planet Finance for this year on our special funding program, we have the CFD bond issuance for 2020-88, which was approved by the board today. We're expecting to price those in March, and then we will be bringing another CFD bond sale for 2017-77, Improvement Area B, in March, and we expect to price those bonds in April. We have several CFDs planned to be formed, and we're creeping up to our centennial CFD. We're looking for a 2023-100, so that will be coming eventually, but we have quite a few to get through before that. Then we also have a number of JCFAs in the queue with our neighboring agencies. Now, we'll also be keeping an eye on refunding candidates. There are three series of bonds that are callable this year that are currently showing some savings. Table at the bottom just highlights a couple key points in time where we've looked at the market, looked at the savings, and we're keeping a close eye on it. One of the great things that the district does is routinely look for opportunities to lower cost of funds and pass those savings on to homeowners. We last did a pooled refunding in January of 2021 where 4,100 homes were affected, about 12 CFDs, and we were able to achieve $5.7 million in savings, which reduced their property tax bills quite considerably. We sent out letters to them and received a lot of thank yous from that effort. This one in particular affects more homes and more CFDs. Highlighted here is over 20 CFDs, almost 6,000 homes, and we're keeping an eye on savings as well as market access opportunity. Any future action on this will be brought to the board for consideration. Moving on to the general district debt side, 2022 recap, you know, we were able to extend our standby bond purchase agreement with Bank of America, and noted on the second sub-bullet, we lowered the rate by 8 basis points. It's always good to lower rates when you're trying to take action. We also extended the term for 3 years to September 2025. The biggest highlight for me on the general district side was when Fitch maintained our AAA rating. That was done in November 2022. Staff met with Fitch as part of their annual surveillance process, and based on our meeting, the information we provided them, and their review of the district's credit profile, they determined to review no action, which is good news for the district. We also looked at where water and wastewater districts stand within the state and nation with AAA ratings. Included a couple stats here. 17% of those districts within the state of California have a AAA from Fitch Ratings, and then 23% nationwide. Now, we also looked at the MET member agencies when it comes to AAA-rated credit. Of the 26 member agencies, Metropolitan, 17 have a current credit rating from S&P or Fitch, and it's for a water or wastewater-related debt. Those 17 agencies are made up of 10 cities and 7 water agencies, and 9 of the 17 have a AAA rating from either S&P or Fitch. So 17 of the 26 have a rating. Some of them don't have debt. Some of them are old, mature debt. So 17 have a rating, and 9 of the 17 have a AAA rating. 5 cities and 4 water districts, including EMWD. Plan of finance for 2023, we have a lot of things going on in finance. We're working with our consultants and management team on our cost of service study and our rate development in preparation for the budget. That'll be coming in the summer of this year. Staff and our financial advisors will continue to monitor the market for opportunities to lower cost of funds, like I mentioned, as well as any market access that we may need if bonds are needed to be issued. Our 2018A variable rate demand obligations, those remain callable, and so we will continue to monitor the variable rate debt market and the rates and what those are resetting as, and any action needed will be brought to the board. And then towards the end of the year, I included this. This really won't affect us this year, more of a 2024 action item. But towards the end of this year, we will be running some analysis on what options remain available for our last variable rate debt, the 2021B floating rate notes. A couple slides here, and then we'll conclude today's presentation. Just want to highlight systematic efforts, you know, over the years have resulted in a strong financing team. A lot of careful consideration and strategic decisions were made. We have a really strong team, and we've been able to achieve very favorable financing terms as well as timing when we brought those to market. Several key agreements were recently extended. We extended agreement with our financial advisors back in November, and then just last month, we extended our agreement with our special tax consultant, all of those for 3 years. Now, our underwriter services pool is a pool of underwriters for both the general district debt as well as our CFD or our special funding debt. This pool was established back in March 2020, and comes to term next month. And we will be bringing a recommendation to extend the current pool for another 3 years next month for the board to consider. We've had great success with these firms. We've had, you know, like I mentioned, really good financing. We have strong relationships with them, and we really didn't see a need to change anything up just for the purpose of changing things up. Things are going well when it comes to financing, and the district's credit is doing very well. Laura, John, myself, and staff recently attended a conference in Sacramento, really with finance directors all throughout the state of California. And one of the themes that kept coming up is just how well EMWD has done and set a golden standard for debt issuance, debt management, and the management of its CFD program. So that was really proud of me to see and hear that from our peers, as well as John and Laura. We're doing a great job. Last slide here is just a snapshot of our debt portfolio, our debt profile, if you will. You know, we have strong credit, like I mentioned, a well-balanced portfolio of our debt instruments, strong debt policy, and at the bottom, we have a stable debt service schedule. I know I unpacked a lot of information here. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any. I thank you for your time.
I wanted to ask you one question on the 20 CFDs that you're watching to refund. When are those, when do they become callable?
So they become callable at various points in 2023. I believe the last few are in September. There are a couple other CFDs that have bonds callable in September, but with the call premium, they're just currently not in savings, so I removed them from this. If we were to refund them, we'd pay a small premium to refund those, and the rates that those were financed at just doesn't make sense. So the ones I included are really the ones that are showing savings. So our future analysis, or the analysis we'll be performing this year, is really looking at the savings, market expectations, investor appetite for these, also call dates and cash flows. Each CFD will have its own, savings profile, but I included the aggregate savings average, if you will, and the savings are looking good. And it's kind of crazy to think, in 2023 with interest rates, hitting highs, that there's opportunity to refund bonds. But the district's effort and the team that we have will keep an eye on that, and when the right time, comes, we'll bring that to the board and hopefully save a lot of property owners some money on their tax bills.
Okay, thanks. And I do want to just say, I think you guys do a fantastic job too. And certainly your AAA credit reflects the hard work that you do and the team that you have in place. And I think that's why it's important to have a good team and maintain those relationships that you are doing. But just congratulations. It's a great job.
Thank you.
Director Armstrong, I would just add that I think it also is a representation of the board's ability and willingness to raise rates when we need to, do all the things to improve our infrastructure. So I think it takes a village to make this happen, and we are here just to help execute.
Great.
Yeah, I would just add, I think we actively manage our debt, and I think your department does a great job, and there are opportunities that benefit our ratepayers. That's why we have the department. That's why we don't just have some outside team sit on something. And it's kind of amazing to think that, maybe there are opportunities this year with interest rates going up. But I will add one other note. You said you were excited to give this report. The only time I detected any excitement was when you talked about the Chiefs. It's the only time. Otherwise, it was just numbers.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about numbers, and I'm sure I could bore everyone here to death, but for any Chiefs fans in attendance, I figured I'd give a little shout-out. Also, Director Slauson, I'm very excited to redeem myself. It was less about the Chiefs and more about my ability to accurately forecast Super Bowl contenders 8 months early.
I'm impressed. Redeemed.
Hey, Director Corona, do you have any questions or comments?
Yeah, really good report. I disagree with the Chief's comments. I think at this meeting, Thomas needs to up his game a little bit better, because clearly General Manager Joe Mawad won the comedy contest.
I'm glad to give him the trophy today.
Thank you, Dr. Corona. Appreciate the support.
President Pauly, any questions or comments?
No, I just want to say, great report. I appreciate you guys getting me the comparison of different agencies with the different ratings. And hopefully the rest of the board can take a look at that. And it just shows the fantastic job our finance team is doing. So thank you for the report. Great job. And with that, I also wanted to let you know I have to get into another meeting, so I am going to be leaving the board meeting. But great job, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Pauly.
Okay. I think we could probably, I know we sometimes take a break, but we could probably just finish the whole agenda, don't you think? Yeah.
I think so, at the board's pleasure, but we can definitely continue on with the rest of the agenda, Dr. Armstrong.
Okay. All right. Then we'll move on to item number 8, receive and file. Is there a motion for approval for
so
items?
Yep.
I'll second that. We have a roll call.
Mm-hmm. Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Okay, that motion passes 3-0 with Directors Record and President Pauly absent.
Okay, so we'll move on to item 9, calendar review, director attendance reports.
Good morning, members of the board. I have no items of interest for you today. However, these may interest you, actually. As mentioned earlier by General Manager Mawad, today there's a tour with Congressman Ruiz from 12:30 to 1:30 at the San Jacinto Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility. And also, there is a Riverside County Board of Supervisors Water Champion presentation that takes place on Tuesday, February 28th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. at the Riverside County Administrative Center, and that's in downtown Riverside. So if anyone's interested in those events, please let me know. Moving on to page 2 is the board's master calendar for the next few weeks. Followed by page 3, we have important dates to remember. Once again, we have the Water Reuse Symposium coming up March 4th through the 8th, and the Aqua Spring Conference May 9th through the 11th. And I believe Director Corona has also decided to participate in that event, and both of those will be attended by General Manager Mawad. Our board meetings are on schedule. And I've also been informed that tomorrow's Board Executive Committee meeting is going to be rescheduled sometime next week. So FYI. Everything else is on schedule for the board committee meetings. And moving on to page 4, the joint interagency meetings are all on schedule as well. There are no out-of-office schedules currently. And the district will be closed on Monday in observance of President's Day holiday. And if there are no additions or questions, that concludes my report.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we'll move on to EMWD meetings. I'll start with my meetings. I did receive a cost of service briefing with the staff, and that was just a follow-up to our cost of service study, just so I could get some more detailed information. It was very, very helpful to me, and I think maybe one takeaway from that was related to what President Pauly was asking about in terms of how we see our rates being adjusted and the different tiers and what tier is efficient and which tier is not maybe our most efficient. I just think that in the future, in our next cost of service, maybe we could clarify some of that for the full board. It would be helpful. Diamond Valley, Lake Ad Hoc, and Memorandum of Intent Implementation Committee. I got a briefing on that before I attended the committee, but I didn't even know we had this committee, but it's a great committee that's formed with stakeholders in Hemet and the surrounding areas to really look at what sort of recreation activities are going to accompany Diamond Valley Lake. And there was a number of community expectations in terms of recreation. And so this committee is formed to ensure that those things do happen in some form and meet everybody's expectations. So that was a good meeting. And then a number of MET-related meetings, briefing before the retreat. And the retreat itself, that was yesterday and Monday. The retreat was held at Temecula Creek here in Temecula or nearby in Temecula. And I think it was a really good meeting, and I'm really glad that I got to participate early on in that, serving on that board to kind of get a real good sense of where the direction and where other board members see MET. Not only in the future, but just even their positions about MET and supply and how much they need MET, how much they don't need MET. And there's a lot of good breakout groups and talking with other board members. And I think it was also a really good sort of team building and bonding opportunity because with COVID and it's been a lot of meetings, I guess, in the last couple of years where really board members haven't seen each other in person. And there's even a lot of new board members, not just myself, but there were three or four more new ones inducted on Monday. So really good meetings and good understanding. And what's going to come out of that is essentially this idea of climate. How does climate affect Met's ability in the future? And what do we need to do? What actions do we need to do to kind of account for that and plan for that? And really everything that comes out of this workshop is going to go back now to trying to think of the name of the meeting, the committee, the Long-Term Regional Planning and Business Modeling Committee at Met. And they're going to now be charged with taking the results of the workshop, assigning tasks to different subcommittees and committees to really kind of work on this. And so I'm happy that I'm on the Long-Term Planning and Business Modeling Committee, so I'll be able to participate in this. But really, I thought it was really good. And as our general manager pointed out, at the dinner we were able to talk with the commissioner for the Bureau of Reclamation, and I thought she just did a fantastic job of explaining the situation. It really shows a real depth of knowledge on her part, and she was very complimentary to Eastern in our efforts. So I thought that was really a good opportunity. There was a board meeting also, and the really the one item I think of note there was a request by San Diego to stay the decision on the litigation, and there was essentially no action taken on that request. So essentially there's no stay, and it's still waiting for that decision from the court anytime soon. So those are my updates. Director Slauson.
Sure. I attended the Moreno Valley Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and had a good conversation with Edwin Quiones. I'm not sure of his last name. But he's with Flood Control. He's on the chamber board. There was an update from the city and the school district, and there was a discussion or a presenter discussing the your credit ratings, personal credit ratings. It was interesting. And met with Joe, just discussed different district initiatives. And at SAPA, we approved the general manager having a contract, entering into a contract with West Coast Advisors for legislative support, and we had a presentation on the budget.
Very good. Director Corona, do you have any updates?
Yeah, I don't have any updates, but at our next board meeting, I'd like to give a report on. I'm up here at the Tulare World Ag Expo Farm Equipment Show, and it's just amazing the amount of technology that is on display here. For farming, it's robotics and drones and just a lot of stuff I just can't afford. You know, it's always nice to look, right?
All right. Then we'll move on to item 10. Are there any additional director comments or future agenda items?
Nope, not me.
Director Crone, anything else?
Nothing else.
Okay. Closed session.
No closed session today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then we will adjourn the meeting to the regular meeting on Wednesday, March 1st at 9 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.